that drive. Bill Lane crosses up Van Vliet. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
In the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Candace Sykes for three. No, it's good. She got it. Candace Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Frinelli, joined by Braden Fulgerson, Kaylee Sugimoto, and Blake Borgart. And, of course, a little bit of a WGLT crossover today with Ryan Denham also joining us in the studio. Ryan, thank you for joining us first and foremost.
Thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
So, I mean, as much as it would be fun just to have a random crossover on any given Thursday, I think we have a topic for being here today, and it's the story that you broke this morning through GLT about Kyle Brennan, ISU's former athletics director, resigning this morning. So do you kind of want to just take us through, in the first couple minutes here, what exactly the heart of the story is?
Sure, yeah. So our work on the story kind of dates back about a month or so. About a month ago, we broke a different story related to this guy named Aaron Rossi. He ran a company called Reditus Labs that did a lot of COVID testing. And this company made, like, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's not like hyperbole. That's the amount of money they made doing COVID tests for the state of Illinois and other local governments and stuff. ISU Athletics had a relationship with Rossi. They were trying to get Rossi to give a big donation to ISU Athletics to help build this indoor practice facility. And that happened. He made a $3 million pledge to do that. And that's what we reported about a month ago. After that, we'd heard some more rumors about, okay, so how did they get him to do that? Well, how do you ask someone for that kind of money? How do you build that relationship? And we heard rumblings about this trip to Indianapolis, and that's what we reported on today. Essentially, what this trip entailed was athletics director Kyle Brennan, his top deputy, a small group of donors, and Aaron Rossi went on one of Rossi's private jets, one of his private jets.
One of them.
To Indianapolis to watch the Big Ten football championship game. This is back in December of 2021. They went on this very quick, hastily arranged one-day trip, like a junket to Indianapolis to watch the game. And they spent a lot of money. They spent over nearly $25,000 on tickets and hotels. And this is according to receipts that we obtained through records requests from ISU. They also, some in the group also went to a strip club that evening after the game. And so we reported the details of all that today, this morning. We were, just before we were to publish the story, we were seeking a comment from the university. And the university surprised us by saying that actually Kyle Brennan just resigned. So we accelerated the publishing of the story and added that he had just resigned. And that is where we are today. Or right now, at least.
Was that expected? I mean, did you expect this reaction, or at least not right away from the university? Or did you kind of know this might be what would happen once the story broke?
I had no idea what would happen once the story broke. We were going to be publishing it like midday, but suddenly the story changes very rapidly, you know, to the resignation.
So was there any particular reason that today was the deadline, or was it just you wanted to be able to get the story out eventually and wanted just any deadline that will do to be able to make sure that the story gets out there?
So we'd once we concluded our reporting on Tuesday morning of this week, we sent a request to ISU for comments. And with a story that's a little bit complex like this, we wanted to give them, you know, ample time to respond, because you got to ask, you know, their media people need to ask around and try to get answers to our questions. So we gave them until the end of Wednesday to do that. That was yesterday. They provided a short statement at the end of Wednesday that said, basically, ISU told us that yeah, there was some spending here apparently that did not, I think the wording they used was, there was some spending that was inconsistent with the mission and values of the university. And as a result, ISU is going to be doing a full financial audit of athletics. That was what we heard last night. So coming to work today, we're planning to publish a story. We've got a response from ISU. It's fair to publish. They've had a chance to respond. And again, hours before we were going to do that, we hear that Brennan has resigned. So that's sort of the timing of it.
You said, you wrote in your article, one line that really stood out to me specifically was, Michigan won, back home in Normal, the Redbird men's basketball team lost against Jackson State. I absolutely love that, but I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that and why you felt it was important to include in your article.
I will answer that question. Let me ask you, why did you love it?
I thought it spoke a little bit about priority, especially because they were taking the time to go somewhere away from ISU men's basketball. You know, not really actively focusing on that. Obviously focusing on bringing in donors, but I thought it was a really great thing about perspective.
And what ended up being a season where they lose their head coach of 10 years because the expectations are just so high year in and year out, and then, you know, you're losing games like that. And I noticed that same line, you know, one of the first times I read the story, and I thought it was even maybe a little bit satirical. It was a comparison of what was going on with the higher-ups and then what's going on back in formerly Redbird Arena.
Yeah, I think what you guys are picking up on is certainly part of the reason there. Perspective, I think, is the word you used. Yeah, I think as we heard from some of these experts that we talked to who do a lot of philanthropy and sports philanthropy, treating donors consistently is what we've been told is important. Like, you can't give some donors at a certain level different perks than other donors at a certain level, or they get kind of upset, and it's like, why did I get that? There are donors who go to ISU men's basketball games even against Jackson State in the middle of the season that's not going that well. And the fact that these guys chose to hop on a private jet and go to this other game, we're not in the Big Ten, you know? That was kind of telling a little bit.
Absolutely.
I've actually received an anonymous email about Kyle Brennan and this story kind of in summary. And as journalists, we receive a lot of emails that are kind of out there, so I didn't really give it a second thought. But who broke the story to you, and why did you decide to believe them? Because I kind of just kind of brushed it off my shoulder in that moment.
Yeah, that's a great question, great journalism question. As people who work in newsrooms like we all do here, you do get a lot of really random, wild-sounding tips that just, like, come in from fake-sounding email addresses, and you're like, what the heck is this? Why would that be true? That can't be true. This is one where we got a very random tip, and because it involved this Aaron Rossi character, who we've been reporting on for quite a while because of the COVID money and his luxury lifestyle, we just took it 5% more seriously than we normally would and made a couple calls. Hey, does this sound right? Does this sound true? And people started to say, yeah, that does sound true to me. And then it's like, oh, boy, now, you know, then you have, and there's smoke, you know. And honestly, with something like this, because it's our own institution, it's our own home, you know, this is where we all work and go to school, you don't want there to be fire with smoke, you know. It's like, it'd be better if there wasn't a story with something like this, to be totally honest. But
let's talk a little bit more about Aaron Rossi for, you know, those who might not know, have not been following this whole case with him. So I'm reading your story. He went to Elmhurst University, but he seems to have been kind of hanging around a lot of bigger universities recently in the same conference right here with us, Bradley and a couple other schools, in addition to ISU. And why do you think this is? Was he just using the money he had gained throughout the pandemic to try and, you know, get perks for himself or something? And how does that get intertwined into Illinois State?
I would love to know why he decided to give ISU money. You know, obviously, wining and dining him on this trip helps, you know, makes you feel good. It's like, oh, yeah, I believe in these guys and this team and all that. I don't know why he did it. I think that he came into a lot of money very, very quickly. I mean, like, overnight. This company was moderately successful, just a quiet lab doing tests for podiatry, I think. And COVID happens. And this, I mean, this person is making, like, just millions upon millions of dollars personally very quickly. He's got dozens of luxury cars and private planes and you know, I don't know why people do what they do with when you have money like that. I would love to know the answer,
well,
to be totally honest.
Another thing that I want to be able to ask about this situation is early on in the pandemic here at ISU, I remember there being, you know, news that with Illinois State struggling to be able to get enough COVID tests to be able to keep students safe, they were able to get some supplies from the University of Illinois to kind of jumpstart that process. And then eventually you get to the point that ISU has plenty of tests and they're in good shape. Do we know if his company, Reditus, was involved in sort of boosting Illinois State's supply at all? Is that maybe how he got that connection started?
Yeah, I think that's another reason why this story is newsworthy, in my opinion, is that Reditus was a contractor for ISU. It provided COVID testing early on in the pandemic. So before ISU was able to stand up its own saliva-based testing based on University of Illinois' Shield spit technology. So Reditus was hired earlier than that to do tests at the beginning. So they were being paid by ISU to do this. A relationship happens. At some point, we know that former president Terry Goss-Kinsey went and visited with Reditus, presumably Rossi as well. And at some point, athletics starts to think of this person as someone who can maybe give us money.
So looking forward down the road, there is a position to be filled, the new athletic position. Do you think it's going to be harder to fill this position because of what's happened here? Or do you think that this will have no impact and people will still be finding it an attractive position down the road?
That's a great question. I think in the short term, the question is who's going to be the acting athletics director, who's going to fill this on an interim basis. That situation is interesting because Brennan's number two, his top deputy, Mark Mulheiser, was on the trip too. And some of these financial transactions, like the ride back to the hotel from the strip club, are on his account. You know, so I don't know if that would put his ability to be acting in jeopardy, but it's possible. And the long-term question you asked is a really good one. Will this make it a less attractive job to fill? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, ISU Athletics has, despite today and the goofiness of today, man, some of the teams are doing really good. Just 2 days ago, we had Paige Robinson get drafted into the WNBA after a great season for the women's team. I still think it's a very attractive job. I really do. This is a very stable school. There's a lot of support for even if it's a smaller program in the grand scheme of things. I still think it's very attractive. Good community, you know, relative to some of the others in the Missouri Valley. I still think it's very attractive. Yeah, and it's an opportunity to build something new because there's been a lot of turnover in the athletics departments. Probably Brennan probably won't be the only person leaving as a result of this. It's opportunity to build something new, you know, to build something from the ground up.
Kind of going off of the reputation of ISU, and you kind of just answered it, but I want to look specifically into athletics. How do you think this entire thing will affect athletic recruiting for ISU and the reputation of ISU athletics when we travel to different competitions as guests?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. I mean, part of the issue here was that athletic departments are in sort of like this arms race to raise money and spend money on facilities and equipment and to build an indoor practice facility like the one that's at the center of all this. So you can recruit, you know, and that chase to be a big time program is a noble one, but it got us into some trouble here, it appears. Whether that impacts college student athlete recruiting for ISU remains to be seen. I don't know. My sense is that the coaches sort of would not be impacted, but in their ability to recruit. But I could be wrong. I guess time will tell. But I'd love to hear from student athletes, as student journalists yourself. Boy, I would love to hear from some student athletes in the next week about what do you make of this? The spending, donors, these guys not going to your game that day to go to this other game.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? I would love to hear that.
That alludes great into my next question, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan's going to stick with us, and we're going to ask a little bit more about what do you look at this from an ISU perspective. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
And welcome back into the Red Zone. Mikey Fernelli, Braden Fogerson, Blake Borgart, Kaylee Sugimoto, joined by Ryan Denham here as we talk about this continuing breaking story about ISU's athletic director Kyle Brennan resigning this morning amid this breaking story on WGLT. And we've talked a lot about the actual story itself, but I want to have a question here as we kind of talked about before the break. There's been a lot that I would say most athletes have called pretty positive during Kyle Brennan's time as athletic director. Three different coaching hires. They just re-signed Kristen Gillespie to a big contract a couple days ago. Like you said, Paige Robinson drafted the WNBA. Ryan Cermak drafted to the MLB. Winning teams, conference championships. Off the field, they had lots of different new progressive movements that were maybe different from the athletic director before him. They brought in all kinds of new alternate jerseys, officially recognized some new jersey colors and stuff like that. So there were things that made athletes happy, in short. What do you think an athlete might see this story as? You think they would have seen this coming by any way?
As you were talking, I mean, I was thinking about my own relationship with ISU athletics, and I love it. I go to games every year for a lot of the major sports. From the athlete's perspective, I guess what I would want to the point I would try to make would be that more than one thing can be true, right? So a leader can lead a department, a unit, a division like this, to a really good place in some ways, and there can be a lot of problems in another way. More than one thing can be true. We've heard a lot about what it's been like to work in athletics over the last couple of years from a lot of people. Some of it has been troubling. Some of it has been good. Some people love it there. But more than one thing can be true. And if one of the things that's true is that you spent like this on a donor trip and some of you went to a strip club, then that's not great, you know?
By no means.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to be able to ask is that there's just been kind of a lot of turmoil in ISU already with the resignation of their president, Terry Goss Kinsey, and the replacement with interim president Andover Tarhule. And in your article, you mentioned that until there's a replacement, it's going to be interim president Andover Tarhule that also kind of takes a lot of those jobs that the athletic director already has. So if you do know anything about how that might work, do you know anything about the urgency that that situation brings in terms of needing someone to take that, take all of that responsibility, or just, you know, if you think that president of a university could also handle that job?
Yeah, so I think going back to the resignation of former President Terry Goss Kinsey, that's a good thing to talk about. One thing that was really interesting to me when she resigned is that the Board of Trustees of this university never provided an explanation as to why. This is a big job with a lot of people who live and work here and go to school here, and they never offered a reason as to why, and they thought that that was an acceptable thing to do. Obviously, as people in the media and fans of transparency, I did not love that, and I thought that was weird. And Kinsey was very closely aligned with Kyle Brennan in athletics. She did not hire him. That was her predecessor, but she gave him a contract extension pretty early into his time here. Very visible at athletics events. So they had a pretty close little bond. She leaves, now he leaves. It's interesting. Obviously, in our reporting, we have not found that, you know, or reported any connection or anything there, but it is interesting. As for what's next with the acting athletics director position, I imagine they'll name somebody pretty quick. I think it'd be unusual to have the athletics staff reporting up to the president for longer than a few days, you know, and then that will go on for a while. Until there's some clarity on who the president of the university will be after next summer. I don't know. Maybe they won't hire somebody until after that. I don't know. I really don't know.
I know Blake's got something else, but I want to ask really fast. Do we know if Mark Mulhauser has any kind of movement in his job at this point, either the deputy athletics director or is
he
staying put for now?
Yeah, we asked the university midday today about lunchtime whether or not he was still on staff, and at that time he was.
Okay. As of midday today. Blake?
The funds for this trip to the Big Ten Championship were taken from the ISU Foundation Fund, I believe is what they were filed for as a business expense. But the ISU Foundation is donor money, if I am correct in assuming so. So in the future, how is this going to impact donations to the university?
Great question. There is nothing in our reporting to suggest that there is a pattern of mishandling of money or anything like that here. So, you know, if you're a donor and you're thinking about supporting this institution, I would go ahead and do it, honestly. I have not found or heard about any pattern that would suggest your money is going to go to some nefarious purpose. As of now, reporting suggests this is a weird outlier of an incident. Of course, that could always change. Reporting evolves and all that. But, ironically, this is all happening during WGLTs. This is our fundraising week. We do fund drives every twice a year, and this is our fundraising week. So we're asking people for trust, right? Trust us. Invest money in us. We're going to do good work. And, let's hope that trust happens across the university, too.
Speaking of donations, I actually had the chance to sit down with Kyle Brennan and talk about the indoor athletic facility that was going to be built. And from what he said and what he intended was that it was pretty much on the go. It looked like it was going to happen. There was a whole design in place and everything. And we've already broken ground on making that indoor athletic facility. So what do you think the future of that looks like? Because I've heard from other people that we might be pulling that plan. And if it is not built, what do you think would be put in place there if this whole thing just doesn't follow through?
Well, I know construction has begun. I haven't been over there enough to be able to see if it's progressing, at the pace you'd expect it to. But I know construction, definitely has begun. I would figure it's going to finish. I don't know that for a fact, but I assume so. One of the big questions we had from our reporting last month about Aaron Rossi's $3 million pledge was, okay, so if this $3 million pledge is not going to happen because this person has been indicted and his assets were, quasi-frozen, a judge basically restricted how he could spend his money, so I would think it would be very hard to make the payments that he's promised to make to ISU. And that was about 25% of the budget for the projects, right? So where does ISU get that money then? Is it you just go back and start asking other donors for the money or find some other... ISU never really fully explained their plan there. So it's, an outstanding question. Where do you get the missing $3 million if it is indeed missing?
What does an ISU student or donor or anything along those lines look for going forward in their next athletic director? I mean, how do you build that trust back? Because, the shift from Larry Lyons to Kyle Brennan in and of itself was significant. And, yes, they're very different in age, but also they just had different ideals, it seemed like, for better or worse. So what's the next candidate look like if you're an ISU donor or student? I mean, what are you looking for, at least in your opinion?
That's a great question. That's one that we should be asking, some donors and student athletes and the coaches, the great coaches like Spack and Gillespie and these people who really know what they're doing. We should be asking them what they think of that. I guess I would, one of the few things I would say on it is that there's just a lot of really good stuff happening with ISU athletics right now, as we've all kind of talked about. So the next person who comes in, you would think it would be not wise to be, we got to tear this puppy down. This is
right.
Got to get rid of everybody, and you're going to be rebuilding to some degree, but let's not forget the good stuff that we've already got cooking here, and try to lean on that a little bit because.
Yeah, like you said, two things can be true at once. So it's, you could have a good situation going on the field and with a lot of your coaches, but then behind the scenes, you want someone to step in and continue to help that grow is what I think, maybe you're getting at.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for all these coaches and the athletes who are just working their butts off and this happens and it's... It sucks for them. It's not their fault, This happened to them.
College athletics these days, recruiting with the transfer portal has become just such a... tough art. You would hope that this doesn't affect any kind of recruitment strategy for anybody or any athlete thinking of wanting to come to Illinois State and enjoy this campus and this administration. So I really hope that they can move past this with a new candidate.
Another thing that I want to be able to ask is that the article also mentioned some donations to his alma mater of Elmhurst and also Bradley, for example, and maybe we haven't been able to get that far with the story, but I just wondered if maybe we knew any sort of effect that this whole news breaking has on those universities.
I don't know a ton about that. We did ask Elmhurst if they actually got the money that was pledged to them. I think there was a scoreboard project for like a soccer field, if memory serves. And I was curious, and still am, if they actually got that money, if that project happened. It's not something I followed super closely, but they never got back to me. Basically, they said, hey, we got your request. We'll look into it. And I didn't hear back. That was, you know, several weeks ago. I'd be really curious to see if he paid up for that one. You know, that was about $400,000, I think. So smaller than the ISU money. And the Bradley one, I don't know a ton about that one, to be totally honest. Yeah, I haven't followed through on whether that money materialized or not.
That's so interesting. That it just seems so random for both Illinois State and Bradley as an Elmhurst University alum. I wonder if it had anything to do with the testing thing you were talking about, too, just the campuses maybe he was working with. That is my only guess.
Yeah, I mean, he lived in town. I mean, he at the time, Rossi was living in Bloomington. His business is based in Pekin, which is kind of right between here in Peoria. So, you know, it makes some sense. He's a sports fan. I think he might have played college sports, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Blake, do you have another one, I think?
Yeah, just one last one that I have for you. So in the past 2 months, you've had to cover Illinois State's president resigning. Now, in April, you're covering the athletic director resigning. Has there ever been a crazier time for you covering Illinois State?
The only one that comes to mind, and crazier periods for ISU would be when President Flanagan retired. And you guys wouldn't have been on campus at that time. So that was 2013, 2014, somewhere in there. I think this is a president who was around for like 7 months and then abruptly resigned after getting into like a physical altercation with a member of the ground staff at ISU. And he was like arrested and charged, pleaded to like a very low level offense. But, you know, you're not supposed to do that. And he resigned after 7 months and got a big payout, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they paid him to go away, basically. That was a pretty wild period. But, I mean, here's maybe a takeaway from that is a wild period like that, 7 months of not great, yielded a relatively stable period of time for ISU in when President Dietz was then appointed. He didn't get that job the first time because this other dude got it, and then he gets it, President Dietz. That was a pretty good little stretch of time for ISU with President Dietz at the helm. Maybe this weird period will yield some stability in a few months. We can hope.
I kind of want to take it to a student-athlete perspective as well, because when I used to be a student-athlete, I remember when Larry Lyons was our athletic director, and I was just a freshman at the time when he said all Redbird lives matter, so he had to step down. And then now we have this new athletic director, Kyle Brennan, who, after all this happens, has to step down. What do you think ISU has to do to rebuild that trust with student athletes specifically when looking for an athletic director?
Great question. I don't have a cheap answer for that one. That's a million-dollar question, right? Is how do you rebuild that trust after all that's happened? I think they do have the pieces to do that. There are some really good people in that department right now. This kind of thread of activism that kind of got sparked around Black Lives Matter that has continued since then. So there's something to build on there, and hopefully they can find a way to lean on that and to rebuild the trust. I wish I had a better answer for you in that one, but I think they have the ingredients. They have coaches like Gillespie and who just got extended and SPAC, and these are good people. You know, you can lean on them. You can build from them.
Ryan, we thank you for being here today. I know the story broke just today, so you've probably been talking to a lot of people about it and stuff like that, but to have as much information as you have for 30 minutes of answering our questions, grilling you on it, it really is awesome, and I'm sure our listeners would think the same thing. So thank you for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
When we come back in the Red Zone, we're going to get into a little bit of ISU gymnastics. Kaylee has prepared a little bit of an interview for us, so you're listening to the Red Zone.
This is Illinois State Winkers Wright, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, Redbird County. Let's fly.
And welcome back into The Red Zone. Mikey Finelli, Braden Fulgerson, Blake Borgart, Kaylee Sugimoto. Now, that was a great first half an hour. We really enjoyed doing that interview with Ryan. We were just talking about during the break. All of us really enjoyed that. And it really kind of put things in perspective with that whole situation, as I hope it did for the listeners, if anyone else agrees with me on that one.
Yeah, for sure. I really feel like, as we kind of talked about during the interview, just so much has been changing here at ISU, and you have all these great coaches, all these great players that come through ISU that as an athletics fan, makes you really proud to be a Redbird. And then you have administration that, you know, hasn't been very trustworthy as of lately, and it's just a little bit disappointing that you can't put everything together and have good on all fronts.
Yeah, in terms of the story itself, it's insane, and I think he had a really great response talking about building trust with student athletes, but not just student athletes. I think you have to rebuild the trust with the student body in general. To spend $25,000 in one night for a donor, that's tuition money right there, guys. Students don't make that kind of money, so you have to rebuild that trust not just with your student athletes, but not your student body as well.
And 25 grand on a football game between Michigan and Ohio State, or I think it was Michigan and Ohio State. It was Michigan, no matter what.
Michigan and Iowa.
Yeah. Michigan and Iowa, excuse me, and it was the Big Ten Championship, just completely unrelated, and I understand as part of college athletics you have to have donor trips, you have to have situations where it makes donors want to donate to your school, but to do it completely unprofessionally like that with tuition money is, yeah, worthy of a resignation.
And man, why would you want to go to Indy? You got Illinois State against Jackson State right in your backyard.
Coach Prime.
Coach Prime.
Kaylee, did you have something?
No, I just wanted to say that although the story just broke this morning, I was just really appreciative and really impressed of how well Ryan Denham was able to put everything together and how well of a conversation we all had here in the studio.
But speaking of well-put-together stories, we have Kaylee Sugimoto here in the studio. We'll be able to talk to her a little bit after, but we got a gymnastics season recap.
The Illinois State gymnastics team seemed to have it all this season to turn out conference champions. The experienced upperclassmen, a new group of talented freshmen, and two additions to the coaching staff. Breaking the school's team record while taking the Missouri Independent Conference title is only the beginning for this team. Assistant coach Megan Harrington shared how the Redbirds are taking their end-of-the-season win and using it as fuel for their next.
You know, there's always more to be done. And so even though we won conference this year, there's always those things that we can go back in the gym and work on to turn those routines that score a 9.8 into routines that score a 9.9. I hope we surpass the score that we got at conference multiple times next season because I think we're capable of doing that.
One of the highlights from the season was the Redbirds' performance at the Metroplex Challenge, a meet where ISU competed against three of the top-ranked schools in the nation. Although finishing last, ISU trailed number 18 Georgia by nearly 2/10, an accomplishment that would seem nearly impossible in past seasons. Head coach Bob Conkling spoke about what that competition meant to the team and how that made him realize the potential of the ISU program.
I definitely think we'll have regional qualifiers for individuals, but really our goal is to get the team there. I know with Metroplex, that was eye-opening to me. I realized that I've been told that by other people, we're good enough to be in that top 36.
As the saying goes, behind every great athlete is a great coach. The Redbirds welcomed Jessica Yamsen to their coaching staff this season. A gymnast herself, Yamsen competed at the University of Arkansas as a staple all-arounder. She spoke about what it's like from the other side of the mat, in the gym, and on the competition floor.
Being in the MIC, I knew about ISU, and I knew about their potential and all of that stuff. So coming in here and just being able to work with all of the girls and see all the potential that they had and finally reaching that goal of winning conference and doing all of those things was great because we are a very talented team and we're a pretty young team. So I'm just excited to see what the next few years bring for ISU gymnastics.
In the past two seasons, ISU has sent three gymnasts to the NCAA Regional Championships and two to the NCAA National Championships. Conkling said that for next season, he hopes for the Redbirds to qualify to regionals as a team. In order to do so, ISU must be ranked in the top 36 teams in the country. And in order to do that, ISU must take the top event spots at conferences next season.
I want to be top on all four events in the conference next year. I think if we do that, if we're number one on all four events, I honestly believe that we will have the scores that we need to battle for the top 36 in the country as a team and be able to go as a team to regionals.
As ISU slowly grabs the attention of the collegiate gymnastics world with their difficulty level and consistency, they plan on using this time to clean up on details. From toe point to landings to hitting 180 on leaps, the Redbirds are ready to perform what they've been keeping in the gym for years.
Clearly we have the skills and the talent to be a great team, but just coming in next year and working on those little details and the finesse the choreography and the things that take a routine from being good to being great, and focusing on those from the beginning is going to put us exactly where we want to be next season.
For WZND Sports, I'm Kaylee Sugimoto.
So Kaylee, a really, really good season a year ago for gymnastics, followed up by an even better season here this time. What's next for ISU Gym?
I think that for the next season and for the future, ISU just has a really strong season set up for them. Like Coach Megan Harrington said when I interviewed all the coaches, she said that we aren't losing anybody on the team, which is a very rare spot to be in. So we're only adding new freshmen because Angelica Labatt, who is our senior right now, is actually taking a fifth year. She's taking her COVID year. So the Redbird that made literal Redbird history by making it to the NCAA National Championships for the first time is going to be returning for one last season. So we're not losing anybody.
So in terms of Angelica being here for a fifth year now, in terms of her body strength to this far in her career, it's something very rare for a gymnast. I know we've talked about that off air. So just how rare is it to keep performing at such a high level like she is at this age?
It's definitely rare. I mean, if you guys look at me right now, I'm not on the beam. I'm in the studio with all of you guys talking about gymnastics. It's a brutal sport on your body and on your mind as well. So not only is it mentally tiring because you have to come to the gym for 3-hour practices every morning with your mind sharp and with your body, even though it might be sore from practice the day before, you just need to ignore it and kind of keep going, keep improving on those skills. So not only is it completely brutal on your body from the reps, but also on your mind. So very rare thing for her to keep going, especially in her early 20s.
And in terms of regionals, I know that Jay Mack didn't exactly perform up to her standards with that 8.95 score on her floor routine where she had a stumble on her floor pass. So how do you think that that's going to impact her mindset for next season? And do you think that she's going to be hungry to prove herself on a stage like that again?
Jay Mack is always hungry to do better, and her biggest competitor is herself. I honestly do not think that it's getting to her mind too much. I know that when I interviewed her before and talked with her before about how she was feeling about regionals, she just said that she wanted to go out there and do her best and have some fun because she was putting a lot of pressure on herself. And her freshman year, so last season, she actually made it to nationals. So she was the second Redbird to make it to the NCAA nationals for floor. So I think she knows that she can do it. She just had a little bit of a slip up, and she's ready to go back into the gym and make sure she gets that spot next year.
So you had a little bit of, at some points throughout the past several years, there's been times that, you know, individually there's a lot of great effort for ISU, but as a team, they haven't always worked perfectly together. Is there any sense that they are working better as a team coming, you know, through this year and where they stand now? Do you think that ISU gymnastics kind of works better together than they used to?
I think that ISU gymnastics is working really well. And I think that teamwork, honestly, is just a main thing that you need to have in a gymnastics team, no matter what, because like I said before, it is such a brutal sport mentally. You need to know if your teammate's there to have your back. If you miss a release skill, you need to know that your teammate is there to push the mat under you so you don't fall. You need to know that your teammates are there on the sidelines for you while you're performing your floor routine, cheering you on, giving you energy for that last pass, even though you've already done two. It's a very teamwork-oriented sport, and I was only on the team for 2 seasons, so I'm not exactly sure the past of ISU gymnastics and their team chemistry there, but I definitely can see the team support throughout competitions.
All right, let's talk about facilities. We want to talk about it with Ryan, but we kind of ran out of time. But, you know, I hate to take it away too much from the actual sport because this episode has been kind of far away from that, but why not keep it going? You have told me and us before about why the gymnastics team feels they deserve better facilities. And now that with this season behind us, going into 2024, what would be, you know, the couple things that you think they really need upgrades on with some budget money?
From when I was on the team, I'm not exactly sure what is in the works for them now facility-wise, but I do remember we did not have a locker room whatsoever. We knew that men's basketball had a very nice locker room, actually, when we went and were able to use it for conferences one year. But ISU gymnastics locker room, as of when I was on the team, was just a couple of cubbies kind of near the bars, and when we changed, we'd kind of have to, like, stand in front of one another. It was honestly a really, and for a team like ISU, who is now kind of getting on that big stage, really building on that D1 reputation, it's a little bit, I don't want to say embarrassing, but it would be really nice to have somewhere to just change and maybe eat in between classes and just kind of relax a little bit in between practices and classes and such.
There's another reason why the indoor facility needs to still be built despite this change in administration, because I think I remember hearing that one of the main things about that new facility was they were going to build additional locker rooms, additional practice space, so it wasn't overrun at Horton Fieldhouse and how it is now. It's part of the reason the baseball field built their own indoor. They along the first baseline, they're like, we're done with Horton. Like, we share that with 10 other teams. We don't even have a locker room. So that's I hope they continue to build that, because a lot of teams at ISU deserve their own special place.
Now, do you feel like when we had basketball play the Horton Fieldhouse game and they had to be in those athletic facilities, that you think maybe the higher-ups that, you know, they can maybe ignore a Horton Fieldhouse gymnastics meet, but they can't ignore one of the biggest Redbird basketball games in the past 5 years? Do you think that that might have been able to give a little bit more understanding of the plight of the gymnastics team and how their facilities have been?
I think so. And I think a big thing that ISU gymnastics had this season was that they were able to get all of their meets into Redbird Arena. So all of their home meets were not in Horton anymore, but they were in Redbird. And I think that had a lot to do with SAC and a bunch of other student athlete advocacy groups that have formed from student athletes. And they would put together things like Pack the Arena and Pink Night for breast cancer awareness and a bunch of things to kind of get the crowd engaged. And they brought it up to administration and said, hey, we deserve to at least have our home meets in Redbird Arena, where there's more space, it looks more professional, and we, you know, the Jumbotron is there. It kind of just sets it more as like a real gymnastics competition rather than something just thrown together into a space.
And in terms of the program as a whole, JMAC and Alana Laster, they go to regionals. Alana Laster places a lot higher than JMAC, eighth overall at regionals. In terms of recruiting for ISU, having the facility access at Redbird Arena, SEFQ Arena now, and having two gymnasts go on there at the regional stage, and Angelica Labatt, of course, being on the national stage just a couple of years ago, how, in terms of recruiting, is ISU on the stage with a team like a University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign? Are they still sort of inkling closer to that mark?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I just realized I've been calling it Redbird Arena this entire time. It is SEFQ Arena, excuse me. And I think that recruiting for ISU gymnastics is only going up in skill. We're only gaining more in skill because, as we're seeing, we recruited freshman Nyrell Bart Williams, who goes to WOGA in Texas. And that gym is where 2008 Olympic gold medalist Nastia Lukin trained. You have Caitlin Ohashi from UCLA training there. It was run by Valerie Lukin, Nastia Lukin's coach, who was an Olympic medalist for men's gymnastics, and of course, coached Nastia Lukin to that Olympic gold medal. So we have gymnasts from backgrounds like that, from those gyms, coming to ISU, and I think that we're only going to keep striving to recruit gymnasts like that and with that skill level. I personally think that if I was going on the ISU gymnastics at this time, I would not be recruited.
So coming up on the Red Zone, we are going to talk a little bit about the Cardinals, White Sox, and Cubs, and then, of course, a Chicago legend hanging up the skates once and for all tonight. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Paul DeYoung, the Cardinal of one of the worst teams in the National League right now, to be completely honest, of the St. Louis Cardinals. I was thinking if I should say it or not, because Braden's right here next to me, but they are struggling right now, Braden Fulgerson. What do you think about the St. Louis Cardinals?
They had been struggling the past week, and if the Red Zone was playing on a Monday night instead of a Thursday night, I would be very, very concerned. But they won their last two against the Rockies, and now they've got a free two wins at least out of the Pirates, I would presume.
Knock wood.
Knock on wood, yeah, definitely. But we've talked about it throughout this, you know, beginning of the season. The offense is good, the pitching just is not. And a comeback win for to at least earn, you know, a non-sweep from the Rockies, and then a win yesterday with a huge shot from Nolan Gorman in the ninth inning. I was able to listen to that on the radio. That was fantastic. That was a really big moment for the Redbirds, and that just gives them a lot of momentum heading into this weekend's set of games.
This Cardinals team, as I was saying, yeah, they've struggled, but they found a way to get it kind of back in order. 5-7 now, facing the Pirates now, scoreless, top of the first. What have been some of the positives you would say about a team that is still under 500 but has way over 500 expectations?
This is a schedule with 162 games. I think that's a positive, and also just the fact that, you know, the expectation was that the NL Central would be kind of a whole lot of nothing except for the Cardinals. I mean, it's not easy to say that now. I think the Brewers are really, really good. And really, pretty much all the teams in the NL Central have really been kind of performing past their expectations except for the Cardinals. I mean, even the Reds get their fourth win 21 games before they did a year ago. So everyone's kind of exceeding expectations a little bit. And, you know, now I'm sort of wondering on your side, how do you feel about your Cubs situation?
Yeah, I think I agree pretty similarly in an opposite. Like, I'm super excited about what I've seen from the Cubs so far at above 500. And yet I need to keep myself in check and think it is a 162 game season. There's lots of opportunities to lose, including, you know, a Western road trip they're about to embark on to play the Dodgers and the A's. And yeah, you had a great win against the Mariners. Everyone talked about that one. They were down 8-0 and then came back to win 14-9. They had 2 out of 3 against the Rangers, and against the Reds, they only won 1 out of 2. But since then, they've been on the right track. And yeah, I think about that same thing as you do, Braden, that this NL Central is tough. I mean, that Brewers team is not to be messed with. And I don't know why, because I don't think either of us would say they expected that.
You got to be in a better situation getting Happer back with an extension, too.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's huge, especially that doesn't even really go into effect until after this season. It'll be 3 years in addition to the season, which is really cool. And I am really excited that the Cubs are finally kind of situating themselves as that, quote, next great Cubs team, as Jed Hoyer, the Cubs GM, always says. You know, it was always, we're trying to build the next great Cubs team. And then they signed a bunch of free agents and said, we're working to build the next great Cubs team. But they're tying down the people that they have that they enjoy having on the team, that they respect, in Ian Happ and Nico Horner, and seem to enjoy being there, which is not something that could be said about maybe a Chris Bryant, I would say, or a Javi Baez. They enjoyed their time with the Cubs and the wins, but maybe towards the end they thought about expanding their horizons. But it seems like Horner and Happ are both very content being Chicago Cubs, and the paycheck really helps.
Well, Blake, you're also wearing that hideous Cubby blue, so what are your thoughts here?
I'm very skeptical about the early success that this team has had. Obviously, the breakout of Justin Steele was not something I had in the cards, and Marcus Stroman's his emergence as a possible ace for the lineup has been surprising, to say the least, but I'm waiting for the regression of Dansby Swanson, and I am terrified for when that day does come, because these first 11 games that this team has been a part of, he's been so crucial for bringing back that hope that this team could be a consistent winner in the future.
Yeah, and absolutely. He's doing all this the last couple games. I mean, he took yesterday off, but the last few games before that, he's doing all this with his wife, Mallory, who's a star women's national team soccer player with a leg injury that's going to keep her sidelined till October, missed the FIFA World Cup. So that's why he took himself out of the game against the Mariners, because he was like, I'm just exhausted. He was in surgery with her all day, and people were worried he was injured. But no, he was, you know, a guy who plays 160 games a season, he was just exhausted. So he has not let any of that affect his play on field. I mean, he's hitting about 400. Blake's right. The luck's going to run out eventually. That's just how baseball works. But he has been like the solo like hope leader so far.
Someone needs to Photoshop that picture of Dansby Swanson walking off of the diamond and replace MJ when Scottie Pippen is holding him up at the end of the flu game. Someone needs to get on that ASAP. I think we might have to talk to our social media department about that. But really, the Cubs right now, shocking to see them ahead of the Cardinals in the standings. And in terms of the Pittsburgh Pirates, I have no idea where this recent success has come from. I get it hasn't been against all quality opponents, but to be 7-5 this early into the season, it's a head-scratcher for me.
Well, I think they had that good series against the White Sox, who, to transition to them, they've kind of ran into a couple buzzsaws in a row. The Pirates finally getting themselves a good series against them, and then right after that, the White Hot Twins that have been really good. I mean, other than the Rays, who still have not lost a game in 13 games.
Wild.
I would say the Twins have to be the biggest surprise. I mean, kind of a lot of people thought that they'd kind of missed their window a little bit in, you know, what they had in recent years, and the fact that they've looked really strong is got to be pretty concerning to any White Sox fan that's been following along the AL Central.
With our last couple minutes here, I want to talk a little bit about one of the greatest Blackhawks to play for this city.
I know Dane Dreyfus, if he was here. I know Blake was wanting to shout
friend
him out,
Friend of the
too.
Pod.
Yeah, friend of the pod, former host. I know if
disgruntled
he was here.
Disgruntled host.
I know if he was here, he would love to have been part of this segment because it is something we've talked about since the fall when we used to talk about hockey before the Blackhawks became just the bottom of the barrel and what, like we expected. You know, they're going for draft picks this year. But after the trading of Patrick Kane, it seemed only right that Jonathan Toews was the next piece to fall in the end of this Blackhawks team we knew and loved. So the statement from Kyle Davidson this morning that I woke up to, in addition to Ryan Dedham's story, which was my first interest for 20 minutes when I first woke up, I decided to sleep in, of course, today. So I read Ryan Dedham's story, and then I go on Twitter to see if people are talking about the coaching thing or the athletic director thing, and they're talking about Jonathan Toews playing his last game as a Blackhawk, which is another thing. I'm like, oh, my Lord. I slept through that, too. So his statement was, I've had a number of conversations with Jonathan throughout the season about his future with the Blackhawks, and recently we had the difficult conversation that we won't be re-signing him this offseason. Tonight will be his final game as a Blackhawk, and it's very important to us to be able to provide the proper send-off for Jonathan and our fans. He's done so much for this organization, and no matter where he plays next, we're excited our fans to get the chance to show Jonathan exactly how much he meant to him. I don't know where he's going to go play. He really doesn't have that much value anymore. He's just unfortunately dealing with long COVID and age. He'll probably sign a 1 year somewhere, but this is weird in sports. When you get a chance to like have a goodbye game, and like usually they say the whole season, right? Like Kobe had the whole season, and they wasted that entire Lakers season, you know, with thank yous and stuff like that, because Kobe's great, but they had a completely losing season, but every stop was his last time here, his last time there, his last time here. And for another Hall of Famer like Jonathan Toews, he kind of just like speculated all year until the morning of the last game when he's like, okay, yeah, this is it, get ready. And ticket prices went up $100 in about 10 minutes.
Well, that's what happens when you've had this theme of athletes getting those kind of treatments. Not every athlete wants that kind
no.
of treatment. Some athletes would rather just go out on their own terms, but kind of just focus on the game instead of focusing on, you know, the noise around your last season. And I think that while it might be frustrating to some fans that that's the case, I mean, I myself, being a Cardinals fan, know that it's very much, you know, a lot better, in my opinion, to be able to have that, you know, sort of goodbye to all of the players that you know, made your last 20 years or however long they spent with your franchise great. And to be able to have at least one game of send-off is certainly nice, but you know, it's really at the end of the day up to Toews to decide what sort of recognition he wanted, and that looks to be the decision that he got.
That was always Jonathan Toews, right? We knew this wouldn't happen. We knew this would be the way that it happened, right? Like, he wasn't going to do a Kobe retirement tour. He wasn't going to, you know, even give it a week. Even a week ago when everyone thought he would retire, he still was like, oh, I don't know. Yesterday, I don't know. But this morning, it's like, okay, this is it. I'm ready to go. Like, I'm going to play one more hockey game and then call it, at least for the Blackhawks. So, Blake, you were at a game about a week or two ago, and the energy of these Blackhawks at this point is just the sentimental stuff like that. Like, they have a random roster. They're looking to get the number one draft pick still in the last game of the season. What's the mentality over there right now?
In terms of crowd, it's still great, surprisingly.
Which is cool, yeah.
I was at a game where they lost to the Blues, and in terms of crowd, I mean, the United Center was about as packed as I'd seen it for a Blackhawks game in a long time. Still, there's a lot of interest in the team, obviously, with the city. The Blackhawks will always be one of the cornerstone franchises in this city. But of the mentality of the team, I found it odd to not bring back Jonathan Toews on at least a one-year deal. And now we're going to be hit with the culture shock of, you know, seeing another legendary Blackhawk in another uniform within the span of a year. Obviously, yep. Patrick Kane earlier this season. And in terms of Chicago sports in recent years, it's just been heartbreak for a lot of the people who have been following these sports for so long. You've got Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez. The fact that those three dismantled from the core of that 2016 World Series championship team, you see them in Rockies, Yankees, Detroit Tigers jerseys, and you see Patrick Kane over there with the Rangers. It's a really unfortunate time for Chicago, but there's definitely a dawn of a new day on the horizon.
The youngest captain in franchise history, July 2008, he was 20. He was younger than all of us when he became the captain of the Blackhawks. He'd already played, I think, two full seasons at that point. Three championships later, a million individual trophies. What are we doing here?
Well, I don't think he ever got into Illinois State University, guys. So I think we're ahead of him.
He went to North Dakota, so I think we'll compare those educations some other time.
Jonathan Toews to club hockey, ISU.
Sign him on a 1-year, 2-way.
I think WZND's Dylan Skeen would be happy about that one. If Dylan plays roller hockey, though, I wonder if Toews will try a shot at something like that. I know a lot of hockey players are good golfers. So maybe he'll be out there on the golf course sometime soon if he doesn't end up playing for another team, which I have a feeling he'll go 1 year somewhere else at the end of this one, right? I mean, he's got to give it at least one more try, even though he's physically not what he once was, and he might try and go home to Winnipeg is my best guess.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense for him. I could see him going to a team that's looking to compete for a chip, just looking for someone who can be there as a guiding mentor. And that's also why I'm surprised that Chicago's not retaining him. He would be a great piece to keep. If you are to receive Connor Bedard, you mean to tell me you wouldn't want Jonathan Toews in the building at the bare minimum to bring him along, show him the ropes in the NHL? I guess it is just a complete culture reset for them, and you do see that very frequently with a lot of rebuilds where they just completely clean house, and it strikes me as sad, and I think I still have that attachment to him as a player, wanting to see him in the red and black next year, but it still just strikes me as odd not to retain him for a 1-year deal.
I think it's the right thing for both sides, and I will say this, if they're going to not re-sign him, they've been trying to tank all year, right? The whole thing has been like, oh, I hope the Blackhawks lose because we want Connor Bedard, all that stuff. If they're going to win the night, let's hope Jonathan Toews at least has something, right? Like, I don't want them to win, like, 2-0 and, like, Jonathan Toews kind of hangs out on the bench. Like, he better score both goals if that's the case. We're not winning. We're not wasting the season with a win unless Jonathan Toews, the future Hall of Famer, goes out as he once was, an absolute star in this league with 3 championships under his belt. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Red Zone. For Braden Fogerson, Blake Borgart, Kaylee Sugimoto, I'm Mikey Frinelli, and have a good night.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course,
keeping you
tune
hyped
to The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.